live from the Colorado Media School campus in the GoMileHigh.com studios, it's time for The Dish. Now, here's Blake.
I'm supposed to be the franchise player, and we're in here talking about practice.
Gordon.
That's fantastic!
And Paul.
Hey, I'm not surprised.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to The Dish here on GoMileHigh.com. I'm Gordon Bartog. Alongside me, Blake Matheson, and we have Josh Dover helping us produce the show. Happy Thursday, Thursday edition of the show, getting towards the end of the week, and recovering some big sports stories news last night. Denver Nuggets and the Avalanche both get W's last night. It's a good night in Denver. We'll start off with the Nuggets, took on the Dallas Mavericks last night here in Ball Arena. Nuggets comfortably winning that game 118-109 to help improve their record to 41-18. First in franchise history having that record before the All-Star break.
Yeehaw.
Just fantastic. And, I mean, obviously, what do you think happened last night with a certain player last night?
Which one?
Nikola Jokic.
Oh, let's go.
What do you think happened last night?
I'm going to guess his average continued to stay his average.
Yes, the average continues. Another triple-double. That's now 25 wins in a row. 25-0 in Jokic's last 25 games with a triple-double.
You love to see averaging the triple-double. Let's go.
Good luck trying to beat that record now.
Yeah.
And not only Jokic had an outstanding performance. How about Uncle Jeff Green?
Top scorer. I didn't even realize that before. He was the game last night. Top scorer of the entire game by 2 points. He outscored Michael Porter Jr. 24-22. Let's go, Uncle Jeff.
Uncle Jeff having a great game. And as I mentioned, we're going to take a moment to some of our favorite first half moments from the Nuggets this first half of the season, and we're going to start off with Jamal Murray's game winner against Portland on December 8th.
Lillard with a monster three gives him 40 in the game. Here we go. Inbound goes to Nikola Jokic. He's guarded by Nurkic. Six seconds to Murray. Murray has it at the three-point line. Murray for the win! Yeah!
Oh my God, what a shot. Especially coming off of his last game. That was incredible.
Thank you, courtesy from Altitude Sports Radio, for giving these sound bites. And that was a really just a great moment from Jamal Murray to come back strong during the season and hit a huge game winner against Portland. That game meant a whole lot.
Yeah, for sure. And to see Jamal back and hitting a game winner in such a heated situation like that was like the first kind of really big moment. Other than his actual first shot in the preseason that we saw, that was like the first, like, yeah, this is Jamal.
This is Jamal. This is what he does for a living.
Yep. And it's always nice to see somebody that's not Dame. When we're playing him anyways, it's nice to see somebody that's not Dame getting the game winner.
Exactly. Yeah. So that was a first clip of our favorite moments, and we'll go into our next favorite moment. My personal favorite moment, it was Nikola Jokic's game winner shot against Orlando January 15th.
No timeout for Denver. Inbound goes to Jamal Murray. Now the Nuggets are looking for the win! Here comes Jamal Murray across the timeline. Eight seconds left to go in the basketball game. Now six. Murray to the left hand throws it off to Joker. Joker steps back and shoots a three. Yeah! Game winner, Nikola Jokic! Oh my! Denver's going to win their 13th in a row at home! Nuggets lead 119-116! 0.2 seconds left! Get some!
Another great moment there for Nuggets fans, and you could just hear it from the energy of how big of a game-winning shot that was, because Orlando, they had us. We were just barely losing that game. It felt like we were going to lose that game. But then the Nuggets, they just plowed on back, and Nikola Jokic, what do I have to say? Game-winning shot.
And you love to see it from three. It's not like he takes buku amounts of threes no. every single game. And so it's always lovely when he kind of hits us with that surprise, steps back behind the arc, and he gets that real elongated shooting form and flicks the wrist, and in it goes. Man, yeah, from three, especially from game-winning, the only thing from Jokic I like seeing more maybe is the blocks that we've seen, game-winning blocks from him. But three is my next favorite for sure.
Definitely. And like you mentioned, Jokic never takes three-pointers. So, and it's very rare that we see it. And when he does, he's pretty good with three-pointers also. I think he has a pretty good up percentage of 3 points.
Yeah, he's over 35%.
Yeah.
Three. And he usually caps out at about three attempts a game if he does three and doesn't make any. He's usually about a one-for-three guy. But also in that game, a lot of juice was behind Bobo's return to ball. Bobo went for 17 points that game, so that added to the juiciness of that W when Bobo came back and was actually putting some effort out on the court. And he put up 17 points and 6 rebounds. And then Banchero also tried to go off for 18. Markel Fultz was the biggest thorn in our side that game for 20. So it was really cool watching all those young Magic guys. Well, in retrospect, it was cool watching the young Magic team give us a run for our money. If yeah. they had won, I would not have been saying that.
Yeah, no.
But now that we came out victorious in that one, and after the excitement of that Joker 3, in hindsight, that was a pretty good game to watch. That was one that I would like to delete, like Men in Black style, from my memory, and then go back and watch
and
it.
And then go back and watch it. Yeah. So then we'll get into our next favorite moment. We had the three-dunk series with Christian Brown, KCP, and Bruce Brown against Indiana on January 20th.
Rebound down to Christian Brown. Dribbles out of trouble. Throws back behind him to Murray. Head fake on the three. Christian Brown. You rock him, you chop him, and then you dunk him. Nuggets lead by 12. A steal by Denver. Najee has it. Front court Murray. Dunk again! Back to back alley-oop from Jamal Murray. This time KCP. Denver leads it by 14. Can we get three? Duarte has it on the right side. He throws it away. Loose ball, Brown. Can we get three? Dunk! Oh, man! What a sequence! Ball read to its feet. Man, that was insane.
Another, what a great sequence that was. I mean, three dunks in a row. That's really rare to see, but whew, that was crazy.
Yeah, and it was during a game which was good, clean basketball fun for a Nuggets fan, where the Nuggets had the lead pretty much the entire game. The only quarter they lost in that one was the second by a point, 25-24. Other than that, they won every quarter by 37-28, 38-29, 35-29. So that was one of those games where it was comfortable the vast majority of the game, and then you got to see excitement like that. So that's the kind of game. Sign me up for the majority of our games being like that one, please.
Yeah, I don't know how Josh feels about that one, because he's from Indiana, and you know, he works with the Nuggets. He's from Indiana. 50-50.
Yeah, about 50-50.
Yeah.
If they're going to do something and beat my team, make it cool like three
dunks. Make it cool. Yeah. Well, then we'll get to, I think, every Nuggets fan's favorite moment this entire season, Christmas Day against the Phoenix Suns and Aaron Gordon with probably, I will argue to the ends of the earth, the best dunk of the season.
Difference between game and shot clock is just 20 seconds. A bucket here puts him up. Jumper for three, go. Rebound tipped around. Grabbed by Gordon. He's on the move. Gordon down the lane. Right-handed tomahawk. Offensive foul, says Pat Boland on Aaron Gordon. Are they going to count the bucket?
That was, I think, the most excited, because that, I think that was the turning point with me as a Nuggets fan, because after that moment, I was thinking, this is a team that can go win a championship. After that dunk, I was thinking, what did I just witness? And then they call the offensive foul. I'm like, no way. You're ruining a perfect dunk opportunity with an offensive foul. The refs took a review of it. They turned it around, and they let the dunk count in. I mean, and I could see and listen to Ball Arena that night that it was going crazy.
Yeah, and it was good that they turned it around because we had seen a dunk last season. I believe it was Jamal that got one taken away from him when he put a guy on a poster. And so, yeah, it was really nice to see it actually be counted as a true dunk. The only thing I'll say about this one that was a little bit saddening was I think it gave us a little bit of an injured Aaron Gordon for a while. He went so hard on that tomahawk. His shoulder took a little bit of a beating. It kind of reminded me of the one time, like, your shoulder pops out of the socket and then it just keeps happening over and over again. I think it might have put him kind of close to that realm of things is the only bad side. But it was electric to watch it for sure. That was one of the ones that I went back the next day, and like you keep watching it over and over again.
That's a dunk that you're going to be watching whenever you like, oh, remember that dunk? I'm going to go pull it up again.
I'm feeling a little sad today. I'm going to go watch the Aaron Gordon dunk real quick. And I'm kind of curious about, I have a theory that dunk also contributed to whoever he goes for his cupping therapy. I think that dunk made them a lot more money because after that, he started to show up to games with all sorts of cupping marks on his arms. It's like cup hickeys, I call them. But
yeah, that cupping business got their money up the next day.
But the Nuggets have given us a lot of pretty sweet clips. I mean, just Jokic passes alone, you could sit for dang near a couple hours from just one season watching those. So I'm super stoked for the Nuggets going forward.
Yeah, definitely. And I think there have been a lot of great moments with the Nuggets, but I think either that dunk or Jokic's game-winning shot was probably my favorite moment.
I think, personally, I've got to go with the three dunk series as my favorite, just because I think it lends into the whole comfortability of the game, and I'm just a real big fan of low pressure games where we get to just see fireworks on the Nuggets side of things. So, three dunk series for me.
Yeah, definitely. So, quickly move it along to NBA All-Star Game coming up this weekend. Some crazy news going on today. The NBA announced that they're going to replace Anthony Simmons with Julius Randle in the three-point competition, and I just want to say, how much longer are the NBA going to disrespect the Nuggets?
Yeah, a lot of people expecting to see KCP in that three-point contest. KCP said he even wanted to be in it himself, which he is not.
I mean, when you lead the league in three-point percentage, that's just a first ballot. Yeah, you're going to be in the three-point competition.
And especially if you look at Michael Malone was quoted as saying that he believes it's because KCP's volume and how many threes he was putting up wasn't there. But I mean, I'd way rather have a guy in the contest. So Julius Randle has put up 477 three attempts so far this season. He's made 161 of them, whereas Kentavious Caldwell-Pope has put up about half that at 242 attempts, but he's made 109. And so 51 less makes, but on half the attempts. And so that's good for 45% for KCP, while Julius Randle's percentage is sitting at 33. And so, yeah, pure stat-wise, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But my theory is that maybe they went back to KCP, maybe after the news that Anthony Simons wasn't going to play broke, and maybe KCP was just like, nope, sorry, I got me some non-refundable plane tickets.
Yeah, I going to Cancun or something for the weekend, so don't contact. Maybe he's going to the dark room also with Aaron Rodgers.
Discovering themselves.
I hope not.
But I don't know. I also would have, if that was the case, I also kind of would have liked to have seen, as much as we have kind of talked down to him and he's talked down back to the Nuggets, I would have rather seen Bones than Julius Randle. If we're going to stick with somebody that's going to be around that weekend in Salt Lake City anyways, throw Bones in there. That would have been fun to watch. Some kind of like street shooting threes.
And another question I have about with Bones and the All-Star game is, so obviously he was selected for the Rising Star game as a Denver Nugget, and now he's traded does he still represent Denver technically, or is he going to request that he has his Clippers gear there waiting for him?
If you're on the crew that made all the graphics for it, he's representing Denver because you don't want to go back and delete all of your work. But I think that if you're Bones and you have his attitude, you refuse to play with Denver on your back and you move on to the Clippers. So I fully anticipate him to be singing the L.A. song during this weekend's contest.
And then we'll stick with All-Star Game because I know earlier on today you and I were discussing some of the ridiculous ticket prices at some of these competitions. Obviously starting very low and then reaching up to me donating an organ.
Yeah, you're putting up your firstborn to go to the All-Star Game, and you're putting up your secondborn if you want to go to the Night with the Skills Challenge. And all the other stuff going on, like the three-point competition and the dunk competition, going to cost you a lot of money, at least $400 to get into both of those. But the cheapest one, if you want to go see some celebrities that you only know about half of play some basketball, $24 gets you in the door. So
there you go.
That's your cheapest option to watch some All-Star Weekend basketball. Next cheapest would be the G League team. And you know what? I'm kind of surprised by that. I was really surprised when we saw that the G League game was $50, the cheapest to get into, double the celebrity game. So we always like talk about how celebrities have pull around sports. Celebrities are always in the Super Bowl commercials, but guess they might not have as much pull as we thought if the G Leaguers are bringing in more money than they are.
Yeah, and I mean, you list some of those prices, I'm thinking, why? How are they doing this to fans? Not a lot of fans have that much money, especially if the fans travel to Salt Lake City, which alone, that's a lot of money, depending on how far in the country you are. If you're us in Denver, it's not going to be that much, but if you're just a random fan in, say, New York or Miami, it's a lot of money to travel to Salt Lake City.
Yeah, and so I don't think that the country's going to travel great for this one. I think it's going to be a lot more people tuning in. And I'd be surprised if we didn't see quite a few empty seats there in Salt Lake. But I don't know. Around the courtside stuff, tickets as much as $15,000 was the most expensive one we saw.
Yeah.
And so, like, there was quite a few actually around courtside that ranged from $14,000 to $15,000. That's two numbers followed by three zeros.
Three zeros.
That's a lot of dough.
That's a lot of money I don't want to waste just for one weekend, which specifically I will be spending at Ball Arena watching the Avalanche on my birthday. So that's where I'll be on Sunday. But sticking with the NBA and obviously the All-Star break, I want to look ahead after the All-Star break, kind of give a little prediction as to what happens standing wise for both conferences, but we're gonna take a look in the deep bottom rather than the top. So I want to look at the play-in teams and some of the teams that are hunting for a play-in spot towards the end of the season, because if you look at the top six teams in both conferences, you can confidently say those teams will get the first spots in the playoffs. So that's all done, but then look at some of the play-in teams. There's a lot of moving around. Start with the West. You have Dallas right now, New Orleans, Golden State, Oklahoma City. And then just outside of the plane, chasing those spots are Utah, Portland, and the Lakers. So do we think any more movement will be happening in those spots?
Oh, absolutely. There's going to be a lot of shaking going on when it comes to six down in, well, like you said, in both conferences, but in the West particularly. I mean, you're going to watch the Warriors with their annual slog up the standings, and then you've got the Jazz, who everybody thought were in total rebuild mode this season but have turned out to be an actual contender that we should definitely not be writing off. And then the Trailblazers down there with Dame Lillard going off almost every game now that he plays. You jump on Twitter afterwards, and there's a clip of him doing some insane shot, looking like he doesn't really have to try real hard to do it. And so Blazers very likely going to jump on his back, make some moves up. And then the Lakers, they seem to be extremely high on themselves at the moment with D'Angelo Russell playing on fire for them.
He did play really well last night for them.
He did, and I mean, they definitely are all in on him being their savior. And so if they can stay hot and maybe play like an actual team without a lot of infighting and in-drama, then, yeah, I see the Blazers, Jazz, Lakers, and Warriors are my four picks to, I don't know, they'll probably boot out, in my opinion, the Pelicans. You're going to move down. The Kings, I don't think will stay. They're a little bit higher than what we're looking at, but I think the Kings are going to find themselves in the same place as
I think the Kings can stay up
there.
You
think they're going to stay up? I think they can
stay above five, yes. I think Phoenix will probably overpass them, but I think they can stay above the Clippers in Minnesota. I can give them a shot.
I have them dropping below at least Minnesota.
Ooh,
but
that's really fun.
I don't know. We'll see. I could be wrong. They've been a surprise so far this season.
I don't know. I think Minnesota will drop to the play-in spot. I think either because obviously Golden State, they're going to catch fire towards the end of the season. They always do. So they'll get up there maybe to five or six. But then I think Minnesota will drop down there also. And then I think Oklahoma City will stay in, as well as New Orleans and Dallas. I think those teams will stay in. So I think as far as the Western Conference looks right now, I think all those teams, 1 through 10, will all make the playoffs.
But one thing I'm looking at, though, going back to the Trailblazers, kind of an interesting thing to think of in regards to them. So down there in the 9 to 14 spot, you're finding teams that conference-wise have a losing record. But if you look at the Trailblazers down there, they're 20 and 16 in conference. So most of their losses have been coming outside the conference. Dark horse, if you ask me.
It could happen, but we never know. But take a look now at the Eastern Conference. 1 through 6, you have Boston, Milwaukee, 76ers, Cavaliers, Brooklyn, and the Knicks. You can confidently say at least 1 through 5 or 4, those teams will get the good seedings. And then I mentioned 1 through 5 because I think the Knicks, Miami, Atlanta, Toronto, and Washington will all be around that play-in spot. And then followed by the Chicago Bulls and the Indiana Pacers, because I think all those teams will be around the play-in spot.
I've got the Heat going up to 5.
I can see that happening.
The Heat are a sneaky team in the East at the moment. I think that they'll get hot right at the right times, and I could see the Heat taking over the Knicks. Maybe not the Nets, but I could see the Heat jumping over the Knicks for that last spot.
I can agree with you with that, and then I'm going to throw out a little surprise. I think Chicago will probably overtake Washington.
I can see that. I'm not mad at that by any means.
Because Washington, they've been just not great this season.
Unless Russell Westbrook.
This whole speculation, because, yes, Russell Westbrook is going to be moving around. He's going to get bought out by someone. We don't know who. It could be anyone.
LA. I mean, I just think he's going to have that chip on his shoulder and be like, you know what? If one LA team doesn't want me,
maybe the other team wants me.
Up the street. I'm just going to just come to the locker room at a more different time.
Across the street.
Yeah. And so, I don't know. I think if Russell Westbrook joins them, maybe that'll give the Wizards the oomph over the Bulls. But overall, I think you've got it nailed on that one. I think the Bulls are going to find themselves, at least at the end of the season, on top of the Wizards. Just a game behind them right now. They have two more losses than the Wizards, but I don't think that that'll hold.
And then top of the conference-wise, I think, I do think Milwaukee or Philadelphia could overtake Boston, but Boston, they're just too good. I think Boston stays as the number one again.
Yep, no disagreement for me there. I'd kind of like to see the Bucks and Giannis.
Milwaukee are 10-0 in their last 10 games. They're on a 11-game winning streak right now, so they're right behind Boston right now.
Yeah, they're juiced to stay neck and neck with Boston, combined with stuff like the straw poll coming out and giving Giannis and his crew some fuel for the fire.
I do want to get to Stroppo in 1 second, but I actually am looking at some of the scores going on right now. Milwaukee is actually up 61-49 at halftime against Chicago, so that looks like another win, extending it to 12 wins now in a row. So they're staying, they're hot still, So watch out for Milwaukee in the playoffs. But get back to the straw poll that you mentioned. ESPN giving out a straw poll 2.0 for the MVP race. And oddly enough, everyone is voting for Nikola Jokic.
In a landslide.
In a landslide. 77 first picks for Nikola Jokic. I wonder who was the who gave him the fourth one.
Like just
who gave him fourth place there? I want to know who gave him fourth place. You know who it was probably? It's probably Nick Wright. He's the biggest Jokic hater ever.
Yeah, I have a strong feeling that whoever it was also has a tally under Joel Embiid's six for first place.
Yeah. Yeah, landslide, six first place votes for Embiid. And Jason Tatum, beginning of the season, everyone was thinking him, Luka, Jokic would be competing for it, but I don't know, first place votes, five votes for Tatum.
And then there's one lone vote, which is the biggest surprise to me. One person decided to throw old KD on there, Kevin Durant.
Someone decided to throw Stephen Curry out there also.
Yeah, Curry, I guess I get just because it's the whole, like, he's Steph Curry. But Kevin Durant, I don't think carries that weight, especially not.
I'm surprised not to see LeBron up there yet.
Yeah, that's a good point. Especially because everybody's been raving about how he's having, like, one of his best seasons.
The record.
His oldest season, yeah, and the record. So that's a really good point. I'm surprised we didn't see some Jabron toss his name on there, too.
Yeah, so, I mean, it looks like Jokic is chasing history and going for the first three-peat MVP ever since Larry Bird, Wilt Chamberlain, and Bill Russell.
Been a while.
It's been a while. 40 years, I believe.
It's time to come back around.
It's time to bring it back. But, and I mean, obviously, as we get towards the end of the season, when the Nuggets do clinch that, so we'll say when the Nuggets do clinch the number one seed overall in the West and home court advantage, I think we're going to see less and less time with Jokic on the court because obviously you don't want to get him, you don't want to play him too much before the playoffs, but at the same time you want to keep him moving ahead of playoffs. So maybe you'll see him averaging 15 to 20 minutes a game on the court.
I don't think it'll go that low until like way late in the season. I think we'd have to be pretty far ahead, pretty late in the season for that. I mean,
and that's what I do mean. Also, is I didn't mean when we clinched the number one seed. I just meant like 2 weeks or a week before playoffs.
Oh, for sure.
You don't want to play him too much.
No, absolutely. It'll be really nice if we can afford, especially with like having Thomas Bryant will really help with that.
Definitely.
Affording us the ability to get.
And Reggie Jackson.
For sure. Yeah, I think that would be absolutely the ideal situation if by the end, towards the waning moments of the season before we're going into the playoffs, if you're seeing Jokic get like sub 25 minutes between 20, 25 minutes a game and rest in that much, that would be pretty big. But will he let the team do that? I don't know. He really likes to play. It's something maybe he likes getting those scratches on his arms. He can't stay away
those
from
scratches, man. I think about it like, man, doesn't that hurt at all? Like, it looks like he's bleeding every night. Tis but a flesh wound. But hopefully Jokic will go out and get his back-to-back-to-back MVP. So
I'm curious about your opinion on this. Do you think, are you in the group of people that thinks he doesn't care at all about the MVP?
I am. I don't think he really cares.
Not
about,
even a little bit?
Maybe a little bit, but I'll bring up this point this past season. When he got awarded the new Michael Jordan MVP trophy, he almost left it at the training court.
He almost left it there.
He quote unquote forgot about it.
Oh yeah, and I guess that's true.
I mean, obviously,
wants to believe he cares, but
his first MVP. Yes, that's a huge deal for him. He never thought a fat chubby kid from Serbia who is obese would ever win an MVP.
Drinking liters of soda all the time.
Drinking Coca-Cola every day, playing with horses would ever win an MVP. So the first one. Yes, that's a huge achievement.
Three-peat, yawn.
So then my next point, the back-to-back. Yeah, it's nice, but We want to win the championship at this point. And then hopefully when he does win his three-peat, he's like, I don't care anymore. I just want to win the championship.
You know, that's a really good point you bring up there, is that at this point, you know, I hadn't really thought about it from that angle of each MVP being a little bit cheapened by it not coming with a championship, especially when you have all the Giannis camp that say, oh, he's a stat padder, and he's they call him Chokich in the playoffs. I mean, those people clearly never saw the lineups that he ran with after the post-bubble playoff runs. But irregardless, I think that, yeah, you made a really good point there that each MVP is probably cheapened without having a championship, and I hadn't really thought of it from that angle.
And then I also bring up this point that kind of statistically kind of impacts whether you win the championship or not. So 2019 and 2020, Giannis won the MVPs, didn't win the championship. 2022. And
like
then
where you're thinking.
Or no, sorry, 2021, yep. He won the championship, not 22. But then 21. Jokic wins 21 and 22, doesn't win the championship, 23.
Maybe he'll do MVP and
maybe.
Championship.
Hey.
Oh, lots of hardware.
Hopefully, but quickly want to shift it over to the ice now. The Avalanche getting a huge win versus Minnesota last night, 3-2. To move up to third place in the Central Division. And then they'll have tonight and tomorrow night off. And then NHL and NBA screwing the Denver teams with back-to-back games. The Avs will play in St. Louis on Saturday afternoon. And then after that game, they got to travel back to Denver, where Edmonton would have stayed the night already, accumulated to the altitude, and they'll be waiting for them on Sunday afternoon. It's ridiculous how both of these leagues, like, yeah, put these teams back-to-back also. So, yeah, that screws them over. Okay, let's do that.
Sounds good. Oh, they're from Denver? Good. They good at playing extra tired. They live in the high altitude. They're tired all the time.
And then we mentioned this yesterday that typically with a back-to-back, you wouldn't go with your first goalie. But that's what Jared Bednar did with Alexander Georgiev last night, and it proved pivotal because last night's game, the Avs ended with 19 shots on goal. So Marc-Andre Fleury did his part with Minnesota, but Minnesota ended with 43 shots on goal.
That's a lot of zingers coming for your face.
Georgiev was standing on his head last night.
Mad respect to goaltenders that can do that. I mean, I have a hard enough time trying to swat a fly out of my face,
same,
let alone a puck coming zinging right at me.
Especially around 80, 90 miles an hour also.
Yeah, not something I could do at that level by any stretch of the imagination.
Not at all. So it's been a good show tonight. We hope you guys enjoy your weekend. I know I will. 21st birthday on Sunday. Got some Avalanche action.
Ow. Let's go.
Let's go.
Just remember, my only piece of advice for you, lots of water, my friend.
Water,
stay hydrated.
Yes. Definitely so. We'll catch you guys next week on Monday, same time. This has been The Dish on GoMileHigh.com.